All right. Hey, guys. Welcome back to the Story Crafters podcast. Woo-hoo. You're here with Nicole, Game Master Mom. We got Jeff. And we got Charlie, the EM. Unfortunately, Jared is not going to be with us tonight. We will miss Jared, but hopefully he'll be back with us next time. Yeah. So welcome, and let's hang out and talk nerd stuff for a bit.
Heck yeah.
Nerd stuff. Let's do it.
Let's get nerdy.
Man, let's get nerdy.
We're going to jump right in and roll initiative?
Yeah. All right. Well, Nicole, what'd you get?
I got a 16.
Charlie, what'd you get, bro?
So in true GM fashion, I got a 2. However, I just want to point out on this fidget spinner, the 2 is right next to the 20, so I was this close.
You know what they say, close only counts in hand shoes and horse grenades is what I was about to say. I got an 11. So nice. We're going to go Nicole, me, Charlie. Nicole, what have you done? Let's do this.
What have I been up to? Okay, so I don't even know. I feel like I've been up to so many things. Personal life has been kind of crazy. I had a trip that I went on to Minnesota, which was amazing. I got to go visit my brother, which was super fun. I had a birthday. We will not be talking about how old I am.
Oh, happy birthday then.
Thank you.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Do we know this?
How old I am on my birthday? No. Probably no. Neither.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't remember wishing you a happy birthday.
Yeah, no, my birthday.
It's all relative.
Right, right. My birthday is June 21st, and I went to Minnesota to spend it with my brother, which was really fun. That was a really good trip. And I did hit up a couple of game stores while I was there. So I feel like that's kind of a business trip, maybe.
Yeah, it is.
You have the receipt. Yeah. That sounds like a write-off, right? Yeah, mm-hmm. Sure does. Mm-hmm. So did that. Had a really fun week at home with the sick kid for a week. We are recovered from that, I think. And I am getting back into doing book stuff, and I'm trying to figure out this week what I want to prep for a D&D game that I'm going to do on Friday with my kids and some friends. I haven't actually run a D&D game in a hot minute, so I'm like, what are we going to do? So
that's exciting. That's cool. What level is it going to be?
I think they are level 3 now. Yeah, they're level 3. So we play with these friends relatively often, and we have kind of like an ongoing campaign, but each time we meet is also kind of standalone. So
yeah,
it's a whole thing.
Like a sitcom. Like,
yes, it's exactly like a sitcom. Yeah. That's what I was thinking. It's like, you could do just one. Like, if we have an extra person at the table, they can just hop in for that one. Mm-hmm. But the character arcs all kind of stay the same. Like, we don't pick new characters every time. So
yeah, that's cool.
Exciting. Really exciting book news. I got my first like physical sample of the book in the mail. So that was kind of crazy. Probably by the time this comes out, I will have uploaded a little video to show it. But if you're watching and you haven't seen it yet, this is this is like the sample. This is actually the sample of the deluxe edition.
Jeff.
Without embellishment.
Jeff, did you know we were going to get to see Legendary tonight?
No, I honestly didn't. Like, I had no idea. This is awesome, man.
I literally just opened the package today, so y'all are the first to see it, because I just opened it today.
Oh my gosh, that looks so good.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It looks really awesome. I won't show off the whole thing right now, because I would, like, nerd out about it, but look who that is.
Aww. Look at that.
Look, it's Jeff's character.
It's Cargrim. Look
at that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Man, that is so cool.
I know. It's super exciting. Super exciting. So cool. I'll definitely be like, I mean, I'm pretty sure most of our listeners pay attention at least a little bit to my Instagram, but I'll definitely be posting a lot more of the sample previews soon because I'm excited to just have a physical thing that I can show.
Yes.
Speaking of, when shipments eventually go out, let me know before mine goes because I'm going to get a couple more books from you.
Yes.
I'll need you to add in there.
Yes, absolutely. I can do that. The nice thing about this Kickstarter not going like super gangbusters crazy is that since I got about 100 orders, I decided to not send those to my third-party logistics warehouse, which means I get to actually like package and ship all of them myself, which I'm actually really excited about.
That's really fun. So, that's really fun. That's so cool.
So that'll be good. I definitely was like, okay, I don't want to do that if there's like 10,000 orders, but like 100 orders, okay, I can do that. That'll be a so. That's super exciting. And yeah, coming right along, the standard edition is printing now. I think it's got maybe like another 2 or 3 days till that run is finished printing. And then it's just going to be waiting for it to get shipped to me, which I don't have an estimate yet, but it's probably at least like a 3 week wait from the books being printed to them actually arriving at my doorstep.
Yeah. So exciting.
Okay. For the reading illiterate such as myself, what is Goodreads? You're a Goodreads author? What is that?
Yes. Okay, so Goodreads is a website, app, you know, all the things. But it is a place where people can digitally shelve the books that they've read and the books they're currently reading and the books that they want to read. It's associated with Amazon. So if you buy like Kindle books or if you buy books through Amazon, they automatically will populate into your Goodreads account. But I know a lot of authors and like really big readers use Goodreads. It's not super, super popular, but a lot of people use it. So if you're on Goodreads, so am I now. So you can add me, follow me, mark my book as something that you want to read, and creep on all the books that I've read and I'm currently reading and maybe learn a few things about me that you didn't know before. What does Nicole read? Well, right now, you want to see more of it?
Yeah. You got like one more page? You got like another page? That, like, because we only have like 3 YouTube watchers.
I am super excited about the end pages.
That's really cool.
They're so cute.
That is.
Yeah, they're super cute. These are the deluxe edition end pages. The standard edition end pages are a different graphic, but also really cute. And then one of these pages I really, really like. I'll show you the one I like. This is like one of the fight scenes in the book.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if y'all can see that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So good. So good. So good.
So pretty. It makes me so happy.
I was gonna say, on like how hyped are you on it? Like, you have a copy of your book, like it's there, it's real, like it's a thing.
I'm definitely hyped. And also some of my like OCD is kicking in because part of me is like, I cannot be happy about this until all the little tiny pieces get fixed. So like I got it and I was excited for like 2 seconds. And then I saw the first thing that I didn't quite like. And I was like, and we're writing the email to the printer. Like I just want it to be perfect, but it's very close to perfect already.
You can be happy about the process and where you are at today than where you were before it even started.
Yes. Yes. I like that. The wise words from the AGM.
Oh, man, that's a section right there. Oh man. All right, I'm gonna take over here.
Yeah, Jeff, what have you been up to?
Sorry, I was like, hell, what are we doing now?
Like half an hour of what's Nicole been up to.
I haven't done much crafting, painting, or anything. We played a D&D game 2 weeks ago. I just canceled one for tomorrow because my weekend plans changed. But because my friends and I, my two friends that we paint heavily together, we do all these challenges. So we had to do this month was Jumbo June, or it's July 1st now, but it was Jumbo June for the paint challenge. So we had to paint 15 models that were on bases that are 40 mil or bigger.
Wow. Nice.
So, if you're a Warhammer player,
or did terrain count too?
They said that terrain should have counted cause I crafted those ruins. But no, it's sick. base models, like actual models. Okay. I think I finished with 19 models. I'm looking at the number that I painted on my paint rack. 19. But
damn.
Those challenges, though, like, they really, like, they take a lot out of you. But if you're a Warhammer player and you're like, oh, 40 mil, that's a Stormcast model. Boom. You can just paint 15 of them and you can paint them in 3 steps. So, but no, it was fun. There's, I got brave with my airbrush. I tried to, I'm going to show this, but it's not great, but I tried to make that look like, lightning.
That's really cool. I like that now, kind of like gradient, ombre kind of situation.
It was pointed out to me, and I knew it didn't look right at first anyways. It was pointed out to me that that does not look like lightning, right? And it instead looks like electrified noodles. So now this is no longer Zeus calling down lightning. He's just aggressively handing you your ramen. So the internet
it's, that one apart. It's Zeus giving the stranglehold to what is it, the spaghetti monster? What is the spaghetti deity?
Yeah, the spaghetti monster, I think.
Yeah, I think it's
the one that's like the beholder but like spaghetti.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just Zeus just giving him a stranglehold.
Yeah. Okay. Where's the rest of him? I don't know. So instead, what I've been doing is I was just kind of like taking like some me time. Like I ended up like on Father's Day, like on a whim, bought a PlayStation because I was like, I haven't played a console game in a long time. So I've been playing like a lot of like Star Wars Jedi Survivor and stuff because I hadn't played that.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Huh?
Which PlayStation?
Which PlayStation?
5.
Nice. The new.
Yeah, the new. And that has kind of been really nice to like couch potato game again. It's been nice. And I've been doing a lot of just like being rock climbing a lot. That's been fun. Just kind of just in doing life and outside of like nerd stuff and just kind of living again. Cause I was out of it for a long time. I wasn't really doing shit for a long time. So it's good to feel back alive and stuff like that. But that's a weird thing. Like I haven't done anything, but it's okay because it's like, I was telling Nicole, it's hard. Like sometimes you get down, but man, it's hard to deny things sometimes. And it's like, man, life isn't always as bad as you think it is. And you just got to move on and you got to laugh with it and just, you know, listen to your own posts, Jeff. If just sometimes you got to laugh about life, you know,
Nicole. Is Jeff seriously saying that he hasn't done anything and yet he was like, I've painted 19 minis?
I've done all of these things, yeah.
19 minis.
That sounds like a lot. If I had painted 19 like, minis, I'd be like, guys, can you believe what I've done over the last 2 weeks?
Hang on. Well, so some of them, let me be fair, are this.
Dude.
This I did in I kid you, like 3 minutes. Anybody can do this. Okay.
No. Jeff, here's the thing, like, though. Here's the thing. You, right? Very well tattooed gentleman, right? You don't, you know, people always talk about, you know, who are not as familiar, you know, they're like, well, why do certain tattoo artists charge so much more than others? Yeah. And it's like, because you're not just paying for, you know, the ink,
right,
and the time, but you're also paying for the skill, the experience, everything
that's
else.
Right, that's
the
right.
fact that you can do it in 3 minutes, for you, somebody might take them much longer. But you also have, also, even though I know what you're talking about, you're doing like the speed painting and some
this is even faster than that.
Yeah. But like, that still takes a lot of skill and time that you've set aside to learn those and know how to do it in 3 minutes versus not at all.
I guess.
So
you're right. You're right. For those that do watch the YouTube video, all that is a copper speed paint over white. It is nothing crazy. And then just progressively go from gold, dark golds up to silvers with a sponge, or not a sponge, but a if you rip a piece of like foam, like squishy foam, not XPS foam, but like squishy foam, it gives a really cool texture. And you just dab that into your paint. I use a pair of clippers and I just squeeze it and use it, and you just start just dabbing the model. It's called stippling. You just start stippling onto the model, and you get progressively lighter and higher up on the value of, like, say you're like shoulder pad, right? Like the character. So you don't want to do, you do like copper, gold, but you only do gold to like here. And then this is all for people that are watching this. You would go like 75% down for gold. Then you do 50% for a lighter gold, 25% for a silver, to get it look like it's progressively getting lighter as the angles of whatever. I mean, your light changes as it hits. That's your minute long paint lesson right there for you guys. Stippling is awesome. Texture is more important. Texture is more important than solid base coats. And I will die on that hill. Texture is more important.
Agreed.
Charlie, what you got?
Yeah, so
the video is unhinged.
It's great. first off, missed you guys. So sad I
couldn't be
here for the last episode. Yes. But I'm glad to be here. That being said, miss Jared. But we wish him well. And yeah, so I am gonna talk just very, very openly about the fact of I have ADHD, and it's been a rough day of ADHD. And I'm not saying this to be like, woe is me. This has a happy ending. So, yeah, I have been super busy. I've talked about it a little bit before on, you know, podcasts and off with you guys about my work has been really busy. To give a little bit of context, basically, I was working until like 1 a.m. Last night. And basically, what I would do, I had a project that I did in 22 hours that constitutes basically 10% of what the goal is for the year. I did in 22 hours. I crushed it. Absolutely dialed in, hyper-focused, crushed it at work. It was great. But outside of that, really struggled, you know, just personally. And one of the things I realized is with D&D is that since I've been so busy work-wise, and at this time last year, I was running like 4 active campaigns, you know, and essentially was doing D&D 2 or 3 times a night a week, and was doing one-shots. It was actually really, really good for me with my ADHD, because it was, since I work from home, sometimes I have, you know, I just get in the habit of just going from day to day, and self-care is something I struggle with sometimes. And so having to go out and meet people and everything, I was doing really good regularly, you know, showering and, you know, treating myself and eating, you know, routinely, because I had to go and meet and be at certain places. So it was actually really good, creating really good habits and routines. But being now, you know, working a lot from home and traveling with work as well, it's kind of made things a little bit sporadic for me personally and outside of the work hours. But it's all good, working on it, you know. Happy to be in still going, still managed to go to therapy twice a week.
There you go.
Shout out to Anchored Minds Therapy, my awesome therapist Sean.
Killing it.
And
there you go. You know,
working with my psychiatrist to talk about, you know, meds and everything, now that got diagnosed with sleep apnea. And honestly, it's really nice, you know. It's it's tough at times, but I know as much as I've been struggling currently, not doing D&D, which is a really big outlet, one mm-hmm. of the other positives I realized is that a way that I would totally have coped with this stress and inconsistency with everything and anxiety that comes with that would definitely have been alcohol. And mm-hmm. really nice, you know, I've been sober now for a while, for a couple of years, and it's just really cool that that's not a crutch that I go back to. And so as tough as, you know, the last 2 days have been, it's also really cool to kind of look and be like, well, here's progress that I've made and things that I've done and things that I can celebrate and be proud of. And it's really cool. That being said, I am so excited for my next D&D campaign session, because we didn't get to have it last weekend, which was a big bummer, but it's okay. I'm just that much more excited for the next one we get to have. But one other D&D win I will mention is for those that watch the podcast, you've seen just about every corner of my wife and I's apartment.
It's kind of like you're in a new corner every episode.
Yeah. So.
So are you though, Jeff?
That's fair. I am. That's fair.
Both of y'all. Y'all always see the same wall and the same cabinets from Jared and I, but y'all be moving the backgrounds every time.
It's true.
I don't move my computer. I literally move my house. Yeah. that's incredible.
But that being said, one of the big things that we also did in the last month is we reorganized quite a bit of the apartment and created a new kind of like a space for my desk. So this is my work area, and then this right here is my personal place. But one of the things I got to do was I got some wall space and I got to hang up some art and stuff, especially some D&D art that I just want to show off.
We're going on a ride.
Going on a ride. So first off, right here is just the new 2025.
I see a shelf. Okay.
Yeah, sorry, no.
Okay, past the shelf.
Yeah.
That's the monitor.
Right.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep, there we go. Okay. So right here, the new... Ooh, jeez. This is terrible. Sorry, guys. 2025 character sheets for D&D.
Nice.
That's the... If you get, like, the new character sheets, it comes, like, in a folder. And I just cut off the back of the folder and put it in a frame that I had.
Nice. That's fun. Yeah,
it looks so nice. It's just
instant art.
Yeah. Shout out to my tattoo artist, Dave Kurzman, who did my first tattoo up there. He gave me that print. Kevin Esslinger, great. Right here, I want to give a shout out to Bryn Hage. She's the illustrator for Sleeping Giant Gaming and did all the art for Hamill's House of Oddities. And got to meet her at GaryCon and got this amazing print from her. Really, really cool. Underneath there, you got the new Dungeons & Dragons stamps that came out last year. Celebrating their 50th anniversary. And then right over there is the Critical Role signed vinyl record from the cast, which was a wonderful birthday gift from my wife.
Yeah,
very grateful that get to see that. So.
Okay, fancy nerd wall. I love it.
It is. I'm very excited that I get to finally have some space to put that up there.
That was the other thing I did. That made me think that I'm working on a video tour or a room tour. That's coming soon at some point. I don't know. Ooh. But sorry, that was like, wait, I know I did something else. What else did I do?
I think it's been since our last episode. You did the live paint hangout.
Oh, yeah.
How did that go?
We're going to do that again. That was really fun. I'm not allowed to make plans with my friends that are watching it, though, because I totally biffed that. And he's like, hey, we good? And I'm like, I know. I'm so sorry. no, it was good, though. That was super fun. Matt from Dungeon Matters hung out for a while. Shout out to you, dude. Love you, bro. the it was fun. It was a good time, and it was it kind of helps. Like, you ever like had the thing where you're like, I'm not good at something, and then you teach somebody how to do it, and you're like, oh, wait a second, you know?
Yeah.
It was really fun to like walk through a painting process. I didn't mean to steal that from you, dude.
you're good.
Yeah, no, but we definitely need to do that in some capacity, though, because it was also really good to have both channels live. So I had three technically going. I had my personal one that I barely ever use. I use that for a live, for a in real time chat. Then I had the Storycrafters one on my iPad and then mine on my phone, and my personal on my laptop. But we should do something live a couple times a month, maybe, or like one or two times a month, maybe.
Yeah.
Just to kind of keep some things going. It doesn't have to be all of us. Like I said, I just did it myself. I need to figure out how to get music into the streams.
So one of the other things I'm also excited to announce with the revamping of this little space, this little corner I have, is now that I've got like a, I've got a little arm to adjust my camera, and got the new mic, so I'm going to be hopefully finally streaming on Twitch and doing various things, you know, crafting and painting and stuff. And so we can sync up and get everything. And that's one of the things I've been playing around with, the Twitch platform, and you can integrate it with Spotify and play music through it in the background and adjust everything. It's a really cool little studio you can do.
Definitely have to, if nothing else, throw up like the links and the times and like when you're going to be live on Twitch on our Storycrafters page.
Yeah, absolutely.
So people can go over there.
Yeah.
I will also share real quick for our video, those that tune in on YouTube. So I recently
got terrific.
The 2020 Stranger Things collection that they did at a thrift store. Got some Demogorgon minis. Very excited about that. Can't really see it too well.
Yeah, that's scary.
I will definitely be posting it on Instagram at some point, some of the pictures that I have from that. And finally got to haul into my big Black Friday haul of minis, and I got to finally paint a bunch of these Eldritch Horrors.
I like that guy.
Not just one, but six of them. Very excited to throw
the little army of horrors. Yeah, cute. Yes.
And but yeah, for the audio listeners, just so you know, basically imagine a tree on two legs with hooves, but mouths on their knees and multiple tentacles and no eyes. Yeah.
Just a whole lot of tentacles.
Yeah, it's terrible. And then like these that. like branchy
I just saw it and I don't like your description.
Yeah. No, it's awful.
Yeah, the description was worse than the reality.
Ew, yeah, it was. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ew. Just wait.
Well done. Ew.
Do you have a side project writing horror? Because if you don't, you should.
Yes. It's a good segue into the lore. Because of I've been so busy and struggling with ADHD in my off hours. One of the things I've been beating myself up about is being horribly prepared for this podcast. And I did not have a lore segment prepped, but I realized, wait a minute, I have a whole D&D world homebrew setting that eventually I'm going to publish. Mm-hmm. I have a ton that I can talk about from there. So I'm going to, that's going to be our lore segment tonight, is I'm going to do a little in-depth talk about one of the cities in my world.
Yes,
that's cool. Yeah,
it's Charlie's homebrew lore. I love it.
Yes.
Well, we're gonna get into that here soon, but I think we all got some cool things from our sponsor, Firelight Fable Candle Company, who you can use code Storycrafters to get 15% off of your order at firelightfables.com, where the candles do really immerse you in adventure. Anyways, so that's a little thing for you guys. But what'd y'all get? Because I think it was all random to us. Nicole, yes. What'd you get?
I got my like big one that they sent was Mermaid mm-hmm. Lagoon, and it smells so good. I love it so much. They also sent some tea lights. I can't remember what the flavors were, but they were really good. I think they were all pretty like mermaid related. Like one of them was like captain's quarters, and one was uh-huh. like I don't know. I could go grab them right now, but I'm not going to. I'm going to try to remember. But they also sent this cute little like message in a bottle, kind of like vial yes. with yeah. some sand yes. and a message yeah. in it. Yeah. And I was like, I love that. That's so fun. Like I already have a couple things like that in my game because I just love doing props like that, but mm-hmm. theirs looks better than mine. So I'm going to be using that in my D&D games now.
Heck yeah.
But yeah, just always so impressed with like the packaging is so like fun and just like perfect. Exciting to open and feels like really personalized.
It does.
Too.
It does.
Like I feel like I can mm-hmm. like feel the love and the care that went into packing it up for yeah. me and it just makes my heart happy.
Yeah.
And it also smells so good. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Casey is amazing. And I actually, I took pictures of it. I do have it right here. It sounds like what we all got, and I think we can speak for Jared too, is we got the Coastal Explorers Pack, a mm-hmm. limited edition storytelling bundle from mm-hmm. Firelight Fables. Each scent in the Coastal Explorers Pack is crafted to enhance your fantasy storytelling experiences. Whether you're diving into Dungeons and Dragons campaigns, reading a maritime novel, crafting a pirate cosplay, or just simply dreaming of distant shores, let these scents be your portal to realms filled with rugged shorelines, majestic mermaids, pirate ships, and dense jungles. Yes, I love every single scent that was sent over here. My wife, again, she is sensitive to certain floral scents. And even if it's not a floral scent, a lot of candles will still sometimes trigger her allergies. We have burned so many Firelight Fable candles, and not a single mm-hmm. one has triggered them. And I'm so excited, especially because this recent pack, I smelled all of them, and I was like, these are incredible. Mm-hmm. We got a big mm-hmm. one at the captain's quarters, and it is just, oh, it's amazing. It's like, mm-hmm. I'm sure it says in here, yeah, it's like weathered oak and ancient maps mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. bits of like, almost like a, yeah, pipe tobacco, cardamom, caramel, and teak wood. And it is just, she literally makes magic with these candle scents.
We need to have her on the show.
Yes,
because I need a candle making yes. lesson on how she does this, because it is incredible. And it's just her, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think so.
I'm good.
Yeah, most candles, like it's usually like one scent, but like hers, right. like it's so rich and dense.
It's a cacophony of scents.
Yeah. Yeah, like a lot, like I've seen other, you know, and shout out, there's a lot of great, you know, candle companies out there, and they'll have you know, descriptions of their stuff and everything else. But honestly, I love smelling her candles first.
Yeah.
And trying to guess like what it is yeah. and then looking yeah. at the name of it and then reading whatever card she's given that gives it, because she mm-hmm. writes beautiful descriptions, you know, mm-hmm. of yeah. giving you this like immersive yeah. feeling to the scent. Mm-hmm. Best candles ever.
Best candles ever. I got the Shipwreck Isle of the big one, which
that's a good one too.
Is mm-hmm. just
yes
divine.
Yeah,
It's just very
all so good. I'm like, how do you even do that?
Right?
No, it's
like
amazing.
This one is very sandy, and like you know that smell of like she nailed it on a shipwreck aisle. You know, it smells like when you just come back from the beach and everyone's like
yes.
fresh, but you're not fresh, but like you feel fresh, and like it's like that smell mm-hmm. just like a little salty, like it's really it's just good. And what the thing too is like I am a candle whore. And so I do love good candles, and particularly woodwick ones.
Yes.
These woodwicks do not break unless you like actually put pressure onto them, and they last and burn properly, because like a lot of like woodwick candles don't burn properly. Mm-hmm. And they like kind of
they're not even
this just straight down, baby, straight down. Like, it's awesome. I love it. Yeah. And they're just fun to have when we light one of the big ones for D&D games. So that way you have the little, and I put it like right next to my computer that I use over in the corner. So you can hear it in the games and stuff, like a little crackle going on. It's a good time. And
it
really does. Really does immerse your games for real. And again, that's code StoryCrafters for 15% off your order at firelightfables.com. Mm-hmm. Let's go ahead and jump into the lore then. Charlie, it's Charlie's playground. We're going to learn about a city in his world, and we'll see you here in a second, because we're going to do some editing magic. And yeah. Bye. Anyways, welcome back, guys. We're the StoryCrafters again. If you're just catching up, or if you are pausing and doing whatever the heck you're doing, Charlie is about to drop a lore nugget on us with a place in his world. And I personally love Charlie's world because it is very different than a typical D&D world. So, Charlie, the floor is yours, my guy.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I'm very excited. Like I said, this is... this is something that I wasn't looking to talk about this. I've been kind of close to the chest with some of the things that I talk publicly and broadly about when it comes to my world, as far as detail goes, because I don't have, it's not published just yet. Mm-hmm. But it will be. I have, you know, lots of stuff to talk about. And I was like, well, I didn't get to produce a lore document tonight for tonight's podcast. And I was like, well, instead of, you know, calling out and saying, hey guys, I can't do it, can't be there, I know you guys are busy, and putting the burden on you guys, which you have certainly stepped up in the past when I haven't been able to, I was like, I am just going to do it. I'm going to be vulnerable and talk about this little world of mine. So that being said, a little background context for my world. My world's homebrew world setting that will eventually get published is going to be under the title Adventures After an Arcane Apocalypse. It primarily takes place with the material plane centered around Earth. In most D&D settings, you have a material plane, different planes of existence, right? Mm-hmm. However, it's usually pretty ambiguous. It's on some kind of planet, floating out in some kind of ether, space, whatever. Instead, what it's done is, I've set Earth as the center of the material plane, at least for the storytelling aspect of it. Not that it is the metaphysical center of the material plane, but rather it's about 500 years after present time. So we're now in the 26th century, and the planet has been ravaged by nuclear and arcane warfare, completely transformed and scarred the entire planet. The big thing with that, though, is there was a realization and introduction of magic. There will be very deep lore and a book explaining all of the deep history into how that took place. But essentially, there was a cataclysmic event where magic was deemed real and was proven to be real, that the arcane was not just something of Tolkien books and brilliant movies. Instead, it was actually physical, tangible, real, just like everything else. Because of that, it created a seismic shift in the arms race, essentially, as well as worship. Many of the old gods, as well as gods that we're familiar with in D&D, had turned their back rather than the fact of not existing. to the traditional gods of Western society in the 21st century, because they had been a lack of worship, a lack of belief in a lot of these things. And that's what led to, in the, by the 21st century, predomination of your main Western and Eastern religions, Buddhism, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, with all of that. And the arms race for magic and worship led to shifts within pantheons as well. Suddenly, people and mortals and gods saw opportunities to take initiative, find more magic and belief and sacrifices in ways that would not be normally possible. And this led to a war, not just on the material plane, but also in the different planes of existence and even among the gods themselves. With that, 5 centuries passed, and essentially Earth became like an interstellar bug zapper. It was this bright light, this beacon burning of magic in the galaxies, and it led to a flood of attention and magic and resources coming here. It brought everything from different corners of existence to this corner of the material plane. But that being said, Earth, lovely as it is, in the 26th century, new kingdoms have come and gone. One of my personal favorites, though, is actually what now exists in the former Mediterranean coastline. Is now a kingdom called the Kingdom of Peace, colloquially, otherwise the capital city, known as Madinat As-Salam, which is Arabic for the Kingdom of Peace. But I have a lovely map here that is made. As you can see, for our video, for our audio listeners, for those that can't see via video, you can see here we've got craters of who knows what kind of devastation and travesty. There's been, as you can see, waters have risen, changed the coastline, but still somewhat familiar to those of us. Travel from the past into the future, may see some things they recognize.
A little eye there.
But it's also, there's been all kinds of magic and natural forces that have also created new islands and new mountain ranges, and have created this place that has created the Kingdom of Peace. The Kingdom of Peace is most notably known for its success because of the fact that they established right here the Gates of Gibraltar, cutting off the western side of the Mediterranean Sea. And then over here, we have the Gates of Good Fortune, which cuts off the other end of the Mediterranean Sea on the eastern side. By doing so, they were able to, over the course of the history of the kingdom, they were able to clear out a lot of the, hunt down a lot of the larger beasts and monsters that had taken over the Mediterranean Sea. They're also able to regulate travel, which is very important because of the fact that most of the rest of the ocean is essentially like kind of like the Wild Wild West, essentially. There is a pirate syndicate group called the Hollowed Shadows that almost completely dominates the global oceans. However, the Mediterranean Sea is one of the few places that they do not have a stronghold in. And because of that, it makes the Kingdom of Peace very, very large and sizable in their negotiations against the syndicate. So for a group that has no rules and does what they wish, this is the one place that they have to abide by if they want to do business here, where a lot of wealth and fortune has been amassed. The legend is said that in the Kingdom of Peace, there is a city known as the Isle of None, which sits here. And the Isle of Nun is a fascinating, one of my personal favorite places in here. And I love to take my players there and have them go here. The Isle of Nun historically was believed that a ancient bronze dragon had settled on this island in the middle of the Mediterranean. And all of the, you know, as people may know, dragons, especially metallic dragons, tend to be a little bit more of the lawful good side, but that does not mean that they are strangers to violence and terror. So that being said, the Isle of Nun ended up becoming a place of neutrality where neighboring civilizations and settlers, those traveling from different places, could come and broker deals at the Isle of Nun underneath the Bronze Dragon. They would pledge their loyalty and a bit of whatever sales that they were trying to broker, or deals or peace treaties, settle wars. And the idea was, we come here, the Bronze Dragon is our mediator, we both come to an agreement, and if either one of us violates that agreement, the Bronze Dragon will seek justice and take out the other party for going back on their word. And both parties, make sure that they also have the Bronze Dragon to back them should they need him, would make regular payments and donations and sacrifices to them. Mm-hmm. And this led to an amazing hoard and wealth, as well as an entire city that ended up forming out of this because of the economy and everything that was coming about as of this. Thing is, though, nobody's seen the Bronze Dragon for 300 years. And so a lot of people believe that it's just a myth, that he doesn't actually exist. It's just the lore of what settled, what created the Kingdom of Peace. Because they attribute all of their good fortune to this Bronze Dragon that helped broker that. Because if you went against the Kingdom of Peace, the Bronze Dragon was there to be at their side. But nobody's seen him for 300 years, and the Kingdom of Peace is starting to grow out of balance. And the question is, will he arise? Will the Kingdom of Peace no longer be a place of safety?
Mm.
So,
damn.
one of the things that's really awesome about the Kingdom of Peace is that in it, it is this, there's multiple settlements, large cities, they have a big military force. But the Isle of Nun, which sits in the middle of the Mediterranean, and still as an homage to and out of respect even to the loyal to the myth of the Bronze Dragon, there is a king that oversees the Kingdom of Peace, there's also a king that rests over the Isle of Nun, because eventually so many people were coming that, you know, there was this whole economy and a city that was established, and the dragon simply, not everything really warranted his attention, you know? He didn't really want to have to attend to every little beck and quarrel that was coming between all these mortals that were seeking his attention. So led to a family that took ownership and leadership of this and created a royalty. And there is a king over the Isle of Nun. Very simple. When you're on the Isle of Nun, there are no rules. You are there. You're protected, insulated by the Kingdom of Peace, its overall self. But when you come there, there's no rules to enforce because of the loyalty and fear, as well as the myth of the Bronze Dragon. Instead, it is rather, people came here historically to broker treaties and deals. And to do so, you had to act in good faith and work with one another. So therefore you had to be civil. And so it's very much that age old golden rule of treat others how you want to be treated. So if you want to get punched in the face, certainly go around punching people in the face, but they'll be able to punch you back, and there's nothing stopping them. No one's going to stop you. So that's very simply how it is. And because of that, it's a rowdy place, a rowdy city. But at the same time, if you're nice to people, typically they're going to be nice to you. And at the same time, well, if something misfortunate happens to you, sometimes that's the hand you're dealt.
Mm-hmm.
But It's also a place of one of its famous things is, and I'll bring up this lore document, is a really wonderful one-shot that I love running in this town, which is the Arena of Champions. There is a Colosseum that exists in the center of the Isle of Nun. And it is where people can come. One of the things that's most famous for the Isle of Nun now in the present time in the 26th century is there is a vast amount of mercenary guilds. It is where you can go to hire anyone to do anything. And there's no laws to enforce or punish. That being said, there's also lots of bounties that are placed. And you can come and collect bounties from wherever they may be placed. And at the Arena of Champions, there are resident gladiators and heroes that will fight. And if you survive in the Arena of Champions, you get to go free. And people get to bet on this and what the outcomes are. So you have this whole economy that gets created, as well as the fact of if you're, you know, it's the survival of the fittest, essentially. If you can survive, then you get your freedom and you get to go on with it. And if not, well, then you paid for your crimes with your blood. Very simple.
Jeez, love it.
Yes.
I like having like that kind of dynamic built into the world. That's really cool to have like this Arena of Champions. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. And it's one of my, and I have a one shot that I do, where, it's very simple, cause I think there's not a lot of organic ways to do player versus player combat in D&D sessions without it being like very targeted and everybody feeling like somebody's going to get ganged up on and, you know, it can really turn ugly in a lot of D&D sessions if you're not careful. So I want to create a one-shot where that was encouraged and part of the fun. And so the idea is it's a one-shot where they're all been captured, whether or not, again, anybody can put a bounty on you at the Isle of Nun, and somebody and another mercenary or anyone looking to collect on it can do so. You don't have to have done anything bad. Somebody just can put a bounty on you if they deem necessary. But of course, they got to put up the coin. So if you make an enemy of someone, they can easily go to the Isle of Nun if they've got enough coin and have now you have people on your back hunting you. But so that being said, it gives players the autonomy and agency to create whatever kind of characters, morality leaning, however they wish for the one shot. Doesn't have to be a bad person because they're there. It can just be somebody that, you know, is being, you know, persecuted unjustly or unfairly. Or vice versa, they can just be a terrible person. Some people like murder hobos, right?
It's always an option.
So they've been captured and they've been put together, and essentially, whoever wins the one shot wins their freedom. They survive and they get a portion of the winnings. So there's a bit of encouragement there to actually win and fight against your fellow players, but it comes in two rounds, which forces the first round forces them to typically work together. Some of them will sometimes be a little bit more independent, but essentially I get to put, because you're putting people in here at various levels in a large group, I like to do this with like eight players in particular, and I put something real big in the middle against eight players. So I'll put like, you can easily do, one of my favorite things is putting a dire troll in there. They have a lot of
is this what you did with the one shot with the big ass Tarrasque?
No, that was something different.
Okay.
And that Tarrasque that Tarrasque does exist in this world. He does roam around and he's also mutated. So he's worse than a traditional Tarrasque.
I love him so much.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I'll spoil one of his unique stats, which is that he's able to blink. And so all of a sudden on the map,
think so annoying.
The Tarrasque is there. And it's wonderful because he'll blink and travel 120 feet. And now the magic caster wizard that's been in the back hurling fireballs thinking he's safe, suddenly there's a Tarrasque breathing down his neck at the end of the round. Mm. It's awesome.
Oh my God.
Players moving. It's a great thing. But anyway, also exists. He's roaming. Last I saw, I believe he was in like kind of the old Russian area. But yeah, Isle of None. I like to put a dire troll, something that has a high action economy that, you know, you don't really get to face a lot, but also something that can heal a bit. It makes it a lot of fun, a lot challenging. The other thing too is you can really limit your players in this one shot too, because since they've been kidnapped and captured in this, you can give them as little items, none or several that they do. I like to do the Hunger Games style sometimes where I put a bunch of items in the center or hide it amongst the arena that they have to sort through and make investigations check for, or depending on their initiative or what they do to run and get the first item, to get the pick of whatever they want. But either way, they have to work together to beat the first monster in the first round, or fight against it. It's a great opportunity to also stab someone in the back if you want, or be in the corner. But if you make allegiances, you're in the first round, you're more likely to have those people help you against others to weed out some of the rest in the second round, where only one can be where only one person can be left. And to keep players still having fun, what I like to do is, because it's an arena, I love the traditional Roman Colosseum of gladiator battles, where it wasn't just people you were fighting against, but sometimes they would throw exotic animals and beasts in there. So it's the same thing here, too. If players, once they die, it's not that they stop having fun. There's a list of different monster stat blocks that they get to pick from jump into the arena as those monsters and play that monster on their turn. And so it's a good thing, you know, displacer beasts, various different little things that they can play. And if they various get killed,
little things, it's a displacer
beast. They pull another one out. Yeah, it's great. But it's a ton of fun. And one person survives and they win and they're rallying troop and everybody gets to play throughout. But that's one of my favorite things and features from the Isle of None. And a little glimpse into the Kingdom of Peace, which I miss terribly. I had a couple campaigns that were running in it, and they had to be shelved with everything that I've had going on. And it's been too long since I've been in there, and I really miss it. And Jeff is going to do the power of editing, because I'm going to pause for a moment and grab something that I will show for the first time. Ooh. The only person who's seen this is my wife. Yes, so, as I said, so as I was saying, with the Kingdom of Peace, there's a number of different towns and settlements that have that dot the coastlines around the Mediterranean. And as I said, this is going to eventually be published in a series of books for the Adventures After an Arcane Apocalypse. There's going to be monster manuals, items, all kinds of stuff. I've got like 100 pages on Google Docs right now, and various different bits of art. Like I said, this map, you know, was something that I did, and working on various other ones and illustrations and stuff like that. One of the things that I want to do is it's going to be a Kickstarter with a bunch of different add-ons and different things. And so I've been experimenting with some of those things. And one of which is I thought it'd be really cool, since it is kind of since it is the Mediterranean, of course, even in the 26th century, I thought it'd be really cool to have a sticker pack of some of the different tourist destinations. Because at the end of the day, there is a travel and amenity and hospitality culture to the economy of some of the larger cities and settlements in the Kingdom of Peace. So I will show you guys one of the things that will be a thing. One of the things that will be an add-on for the Kickstarter. So here we have a number of stickers showcasing their kind of whether it's their flag, whether it is kind of more of like a postcard or advertisement for that city or settlement. But first off, we'll start with the gates of. And I'll point them out on the map, too. I'll do that one. Gates of Gibraltar. A little bit hard to see with the video and the lighting, but wonderfully
new. That looks like it'd make a dope tattoo. That's what I'm
saying. Yeah. Yeah.
yeah, there we go. And then the other port city, which is the Gates of Good Fortune. This is their sticker design.
Ooh.
Yeah. Fallout vibes, love it.
Yeah. Yeah.
The capital city, Madana Asalam. And of course, an homage to they still know they there's questions of the corruption and bureaucracy that occurs here, but nonetheless, ooh, they still pay a lot of respect and homage to the old loyalties of the Bronze Dragon.
Wow.
Some of the great towns along the along the coastline. We also have the New Cape of Hope. One of the things the town there or the city there is known for, their slogan, Imagine the Impossible.
Oh, that's cool.
It's to be a place of people can come and doesn't matter where you're from, you can have a fresh start in the New Cape of Hope. A small homage to Matt Mercer and the Critical Role cast. There is a lovely vacation settlement called the Quisarian Coast.
Mm.
That is their sticker. It says, where life is as easy as the breeze.
Nice.
Great place to go for a vacation.
That's a good trip there, right there, man.
Get away from mercenaries. Thank you. speaking of another place that has a very rich history, a town that was eventually, it was actually a settlement a lot for wayward travelers and people down on their luck, and eventually was adopted into the Kingdom of Peace, which is known as Hadrian's Refuge, which is Mount Hadrian right there. And then a very, very, now if you're looking, if you're somebody in the Kingdom of Peace that has deep pockets and you're looking for a wonderful place to summer or vacation, you can't go wrong with the Shrouded Oasis. Definitely the best place that money can get you for relaxation. So.
And these stickers are dope, dude.
Thanks.
those are really cool. Did you design those? Is that your art?
Not necessarily my art, but yeah, I did. I spent like a couple hours, between Canva and a couple other places, just mixing and matching and playing around with colors, layering different shapes and whatnot, and creating.
Yeah, that sounds like it's your art then. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. but yeah, so eventually these will be in these handy little sticker packs that you can get to show your support for some of your favorite places to travel in the Kingdom of Peace.
And that's so cool.
That's this session's lore.
That's honestly, so cool, dude.
That's amazing. I'm super excited about it. And I need you to just like drop the mic or something, because that's so epic and crazy.
Yeah.
And I kind of don't want to be a GM anymore. I think I'm done. I think I retire, because that's like next level. The maps and the lore and the depth of it. I am not on that level. I just need to leave it to the professionals, I think.
The whole thing that the whole time I couldn't stop getting out of my head. I want to be a player in your game. Like I'm about to hit up Chris and be like, "Yo, give me Charlie's games. Like I want to go play in them." Like,
oh yeah,
that looks so. The way that you describe it, the way that you have integrated everything from real life, it's relatable, but it's arcane, it's gothic, it's beautiful. You didn't come up with that. Come on, man, be real. Like, that's insane, dude. Like,
yeah. And I mean, I'll be honest, like I know I am not doing this world justice or anything, because like I said, I am like hanging by a thread tonight between lack of sleep and ADHD.
I think
I've got some great stuff that I can read and share, and we'll put it, perhaps we could do a little session for the Patreon to go more in depth. But I mean, just on the Isle of Nun itself, I've got 7 pages. Gates of Gibraltar, 14 pages on that. It's a really rich place, and it's just one aspect, one corner of this whole thing. And my inspiration for my world in general was, I really like, and if you read the Dungeon Master's Manual for 5th edition. It says, if you're doing a homebrew set, pick something that you like. Pick something that you enjoy, something that interests you, and build your world around it. But a lot of times I see, and if that is the route that you go, it can become very homogenous. And if you look at the world that we live in, it is rich, there's vibrant, there's so much differences that exist simultaneously in chaotic harmony at times. And I was like, I don't want a world that's going to be just one dimensional, one color, one flavor, one anything. And I wanted it to be big and wide. I mean, if it's a world that my players can be in, I want it to feel like a vast world. I want them to feel insignificant in the greater scheme of things, because I want it to be that much more notable and that much more impactful when they make a big impression, when they make a big change or scar to the planet. At the same time, though, one of the things that I find to be quite a burden, especially with new players and bringing people into D&D, something I hear a lot is, well, I don't know anything about it. I don't know any of the lore. I don't know any of the stuff.
Like, you have to study up on it.
Yeah. And that immersion is so important to me as a GM. And so I figured if I centered the, if the storytelling center of the material plane is something that is somewhat tangible and familiar, but distanced enough that you can feel some degree of ownership in what is happening and what you do. And it makes the storytelling, the collaborative storytelling happening around the table, it gives people that much more autonomy. It makes them feel that they have a place in the space to tell and contribute. Whereas, like, some people can feel like, oh, I don't know enough about this. I don't want to ruin it or mess it up or anything. And I'm like, the world is a nuclear shit show. Chaotic magic ravaging the place. You step on the wrong thing and you could be disintegrated from a centuries old trap, or you'll run into, I got a really cool mini recently that is wonderfully emblematic of some of the beasts that you'll see, which is this horribly mutated bear.
Oh, nice.
And I mean, that I was like, wow, this is a Wizards of the Coast mini that I found when I was traveling in Dayton.
Actually looks good, too, for a Wizards of the Coast mini.
I know.
Shocked.
And I was like, there's a lot of animals and everything that have just been terribly mutated and evolved and become new apex predators. And, you know, their ancestors would have been gerbils or deer. And now they're the apex predators of the place. So it gives a little bit of familiarity, but at the same time, enough ambiguity that players can feel like they can mess around with it. They can make changes. They can break things. And they're not worried about, you know, like, oh, I'm going to create a consequence that the GM can't come back from, or that's going to be too much for other people to you know, be creative with. You know, you can do whatever you want. And the other thing, too, that I also like, by setting it in the material plane, this is my last thing about it. I'm sorry, everyone.
No, this is good. This is good.
The other thing that I love about it is by setting it in the material plane, I can make, and with magic, it makes everything in the 50 years of D&D history and third-party content canon. If Earth exists in the material plane, anything else can exist in the material plane in an alternate universe, parallel dimension, deep astral sea of space beyond the edges of the Milky Way galaxy. Everything can exist in the material plane or astral plane or negative plane or elemental plane of fire. It all exists in tandem around each other, intertwined in this chaos, and it makes everything canon. So when I have new players that join my campaigns, a lot of times my veteran players, they'll be like, all right, yeah, I'd like to join, but I want to know, what are the restrictions? What can't I play? What stuff is not, you know, canon? What can't I do? And I'm like, there's nothing. There's no restrictions. Whatever you want to do, bring it.
Love that.
All right.
And if it's not written or existing in this world already, it forces me to, which is great because I have ADHD, it forces me to have to write it in and explain how does, you know, a plasmoid. I had a player who joined my campaign once. He was a plasmoid.
Fun.
Super obscure. Yeah. Not a lot of people know plasmoids, but they're so cool. And we had him birthed from a star in the astral sea. And his father was a deity that wanted to create life and so created him. But then he wanted to forge a life on his own, and so he hitched a series of rides with auto gnomes through the astral sea and eventually found his way to the material plane and now crashed into Earth like a falling star. And he's a plasmoid.
That's so cool.
That's crazy.
But I mean, that's what I say. I tell my players, it doesn't matter. Whatever you want to be it. Create a backstory for your character. I don't care what it is. Create it. You're not going to break anything. And then just give me as the GM then the creative storytelling autonomy to create the bridge that brings your character from whatever background to whatever campaign you're joining with the rest of the group. And primarily we play on Earth, but I tell my players all the time, I'm like, you can leave Earth if you want. I mean, I've got a whole separate lore document for what's happening on the moon, in the history of the moon in the last 500 years.
Moon's haunted.
Look up lunar dragons. There might be one buried in the center of the moon there.
Why is your world so cool, dude?
it's too much. It's too cool. Yeah. It's too cool. I can't. My mind is like turning into jelly right now.
You, the more you're telling us, the proverbial, you know, F around and find out is just going.
Yes.
Like, it's awesome, dude. Like,
yeah. I, my favorite thing is when I have players that tell me, they're like I'll get occasionally get that real veteran player, you know, who's been playing for a long time or played a ton of D&D, and they'll be like, I'm determined to break your world, and I tell them,
you can try,
you can try, but there's, and they're like, oh well, you think I can't? I'm like, no, there's already a mortal who was turned into a deity that you know nothing about, and none of the other deities know anything about. He's been playing them as fools for centuries. It's his plan to destroy the material plane. So if you can beat him to it, then I guess, but he's probably going to beat you there first. He's already had his plans in motion for over a millennia, well before the Arcane Apocalypse started. So good luck seeing if you can beat that.
Yeah.
He's already 5 steps ahead of you.
Man.
So,
Charlie, that was super cool, dude. Like,
we need to have like a whole shoot off episode or something extra for the Patreon or something about more of this, because it's just like,
yeah. If you guys are interested, listeners, in Patreon and want to learn more about our worlds, I'm sure we can, because I think we all homebrew our own worlds. We can. Maybe, you know, see what we can do for you.
All right. Thank you guys for joining us again. We really appreciate you guys. Everybody who listens regularly, or even if it's your first time listening, thanks for joining us around the fireside as we talk about D&D and crafting and world building and the other nerd things that we talk about. This is Nicole. Signing off, saying bye. Also, Jeff and bye. Charlie. And hopefully we'll have Jared back soon. Next time. Next time, we will talk about our topic, actually, which is our favorite puzzles that we like to use in our D&D games. See you guys next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Loves all things.
Bye.